Just a quick note, just a quick reminder, the last two episodes, we've had Jason Caldwell on the podcast. If you haven't listened, please do so before listening to today's episode. So when assembling our team, we often as leaders can make the same mistake as Jason did with his first Atlantic row. We go out, we try to find the best guys, typically the most talented. Some leaders are pretty good about, you know, identifying high character athletes. Not everybody, but we find the best guys, we get them on the boat, we plan the row, and then we go. And then once we're in it, we try to focus on culture, especially when issues come up. Without a doubt, all great teams need talent, and you definitely need character. But without culture, talent and even character don't translate to success. And culture starts with connection. It starts before you get into the thick of your season as a team, before you start your row across the ocean like Caldwell, before you've gotten in the boat. You have to be better connected. If you're not connected, you will fail. You will fail to reach your potential as a team. Now, without a doubt, building connection and strengthening your team culture, some of that comes through the journey. But you have to start with connection. I remember years ago when I would coach high school basketball, I would often get players late into the season, like more than half my team. They would come off the football field sometimes over a month into the year. And what would I focus in that first week to get them up to speed? It was technical skills and tactical systems. I was in a rush to get them to learn our offense and our defense, to get up shots. And I thought, you know, hey, connection and culture, those are things that will happen later when we found the time. Well, honestly, that didn't work very well. Just like Jason and his first Atlantic crossing. Now today, Jason Caldwell will share with us some of the things he does to get his teams ready for an ocean crossing, or some of the stuff he does with organizations and teams he consults with now in his organization, LAT35. So I know you're going to find a lot of value in today's episode. Welcome back to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. I'm the founder of TOC Culture Consulting, coaching and supporting coaches to become better leaders and build better cultures in a practical and simple way. If you haven't already, check out my latest book, The Culture System, A Proven Process for Creating an Extraordinary Team Culture. You can check it out at myculturesystem.com. It's an easy and engaging read, but it's also super, super practical. It will give you the tools and methods necessary to build a great culture and the system to help implement those. Buy a copy today. Links are at myculturesystem.com, or you can just go on to amazon.com, wherever you're located. Now, let's get into part three of our conversation with Jason Caldwell. Yeah, so let's explore that a little bit with the Atlantic 2 crossing and the Pacific crossing. Here, you know, you've talked a lot about today the things you have to do to get the team ready, you know, to build trust, to bring them together so that you can go out there and row the row. But how did you create opportunities to continue to, as you said earlier, carry through this process of team building? I imagine the shared suffering is it can bring you together once you're on, and just the rowing itself will bring you together a little bit out there. But, you know, what were some practical ways you did that on Atlantic 2 and the Pacific crossing?
Yeah, I'll tell you one of the best things that we do, and I do this with every one of my teams from here on out. Any teams that I advise, I also encourage them strongly to do this, and that is to create a team mission statement or value statement. And this seems pretty cliche, and you think like, okay, we already do that, but consider this. In my situation, we've got four people that are going to go do something very, very difficult. And we've already explored the fact that we all have different whys. We can all want to win the race, but the intrinsic motivation behind wanting to win that race are all very different. So what our teams do before we even have our first practice is once the team establishes, we all meet and we, sometimes it's virtually, sometimes it's in person, and we all talk about what our mission statement is going to be. And we all start by bringing our own mission statement to the board. So we all have separate ones. I want to row as fast as I can from San Francisco to Hawaii, you know, to not only win the race, but to break a world record and be closer to my teammates than I was when we left, or something like that, you know, whatever it is. And everyone's is going to have some, there's going to be some commonalities in them, but they're all kind of different. And the challenge is to create one statement from all of those statements. And sometimes, and it has with some of my teams, taken weeks of talking back and forth, arguing about it productively, conceding, having to concede, you know, having to say, okay, I'm willing to give this part up because we want to make room for that part that you absolutely need to have in there. And we do not start any type of training until that mission statement is absolutely 100% clear. We write it out, we print it out, we sign it. And for my purposes of my teams, we print it as a decal and we put it inside on the wall as a sticker inside both cabins that you look at every single day, every single day. And if we want to talk about the practicality of that, because of course, people say, well, that's great. That brings us all together, but what the hell, how's that going to help? I'll tell you how that helps. You can make decisions on it. When there's a crossroads, a team has to make a decision. You make a decision that directly supports that. And I'll give you an example. Halfway through the Pacific last year, we hit the doldrums, dead, flat water, hot as can be, no wind, slight current against us, and it's miserable, absolutely miserable. We're limping across the halfway point, and we're in trouble. And Angus, one of my teammates, oldest teammates from Ocean Reunion, guys, he's like my brother in adventure. He comes out of the cabin because he's on his rest shift. He's dripping with sweat. The cabins are like saunas. He says, we got to throw out the anchor. He says, well, throw out the pair anchor. We got to stop. And he did the calculation inside the cabin. He says, if we put out the anchor, we'll drift backwards about a half a knot, which means that at the end of 6 hours on anchor, we'll have drifted back 3 miles. But he said, we'll have had 6 hours of rest. I think it's worth resting for 6 hours. We're so beat up right now. You never get 6 hours of rest. And we'll lose 3 miles. And I countered and said, however, if we don't anchor, we continue to push through, and we only row a half a knot forward for the next 6 hours, we'll have made up 3 miles. That's a 6 mile swing. So instead of losing three, we'll be 3 miles ahead. That's 6 miles. And I said, and on top of that, we'll feel like we can take on the next challenge. That will give us confidence. And he responds to me and he says this exactly. I don't give a shit about how we'll feel. I don't give a shit about it. He's emotional. It's charged. It's not disrespectful. It's just how it is out there. He doesn't care about the confidence it'll give us. He's talking about sleep. He's talking about rest. He's tired. He's beat up. He's not sure how he's going to get through his next 2 hours. And we don't know how long this thing's going to last. So we have a discussion on board about it, and we're split. Two guys want to anchor. Two guys want to continue on. Now, in our situation, because it's an even amount of people, on a split decision, the final decision comes down to the captain, which is me. So I know that no matter what I decide, I'm going to piss off half the team, all right? And most likely, I'm going to take my position because I want to continue on. That's what I'm going to pick. So instead of making an emotionally charged decision that's going to upset two of my team members, and who knows, like, how long that will take for them to get over, I point to the mission statement. I say, that mission statement right there that we all agreed to, that has our signatures below it, that's posted as a decal inside that cabin, says we're going to row from San Francisco to Hawaii as hard as we can, as fast as we can, for as long as we can, so that when we get to Hawaii, we will know that we have done everything we can to go from San Francisco to Hawaii in record time. That's paraphrasing. That's essentially what it said. I made the decision off that. The decision is to keep on going, not because that's what I want to do, but because that's actually, in this situation, supports the mission statement. If there was just a little bit of current more against us and we were getting pushed backwards, the right decision would have been Angus's to anchor, because that would have supported the mission statement. We can't make forward progress. We're getting pushed backwards. Anchoring would slow us down and would keep us from losing more distance backwards. So probably another knot of current would have changed and flipped the decision to actually do that. So, but instead of making an emotionally charged decision, I could make a data-driven decision. And although I still had two teammates that weren't excited about it, they could understand it. And that's where we came from. So this idea of creating a mission statement, value statement, whatever it is absolutely pivotal. And people will push that aside, or they'll say, we've talked about it. F that. Don't talk about it. Write it. Put pen to paper. Get it somewhere. If you're a basketball team, hang it in the gym. Hang it in the locker room. You should be looking at it every single day. And you should be making decisions against it. So,
I love that. And the story is perfect to go along with that, because I do feel like it can be sometimes cliche, but I love how you come back to the mission statement, the values, all that stuff. It guides our decisions in the hard moments. One of the things, though, that also came out in the documentary is that you're pretty good at the fun stuff, too. Like, it's not all like, you know, you had some, I just remember this one moment, I think it was Matt that was going through your itinerary for the day. You know, I think that fun is a great way to connect. So just what are some things you do to keep things fun on these long journeys?
Yeah, you got to keep it fun. There's got to be some levity. There's so much to be upset about out there. There's so much expectation that's being dashed. And for me, I've always been, even though I'm talking about me being a tough guy and, you know, being a jerk and all this stuff, like, actually I love humor, and I've always been a fan, and I always revert to humor, oftentimes when I'm in situations that make me nervous or scared, or we're in particular tough times. And I think that's played itself very well. It's funny how a small game can keep you going. We have these fun games that we do. I maybe you guys remember this from school, but we had to learn the states in alphabetical order through that little song that we had to memorize when we were in like fourth or fifth grade, you know? And so as a result, I still have my head and I can say the states in alphabetical order: Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, and all that kind of stuff. Well, my teammates on this last row were fascinated by that and wanted to learn it. Well, guess what? We have all the time in the world out there. So we made it a game. You when you were on your rowing shift, only when you were on your shift, you had a chance to be the first one on the team outside of me to do it on the GoPro. We turned the GoPro on and you could recite it to yourself in the cabin. It wasn't official unless it was on your rowing shift with the GoPro. And we had a great time because one of my teammates, Duncan, got it right away. I mean, he was fast on it. Within the first few days, he'd figured it out. But he would get stage fright on the GoPro. Couldn't get it done. Doesn't count. And so we'd have these fun games and we have all, you know, we just created things. It could be as silly as can be, something that you would never waste your time with back home, all of a sudden becomes something that saves you out there. But a chance to connect. Another great story is my teammate Duncan, the same one in the Pacific. You know, we're about 2/3 of the way through the crossing last year in the Pacific, and I'm struggling. It's getting hot, real hot during the day. And my mid shift, my day shift right in the middle was just the one I couldn't stand. It was so hot. I liked rowing at night. And he knew that, you know, he knew that that was my tough shift. And he said, he says, have you ever read or watched the show Band of Brothers, HBO? I said, no, I never saw it. My dad loved it though. He says, oh, it's so great. He's a military guy. And he says, it's so great. And he says, I've got it on audio. What if I just put it on like the speaker and for one of our hour shifts together in midday, we just listen to it for 1 hour. He said, I did the calculation and it's 16 hours. And, you know, we've got like that many days or whatever left. He says, like, if we keep going this thing, like it'll take us right to the end. I was like, not that that's going to help, but okay, whatever. Like it'll take my mind off it for a second. Oh my goodness. It was so powerful. We always say, like, let's turn on Bob, Band of Brothers. And we just say, and it was for that 1 hour I looked for it, just like breakfast. It was that 1 hour I was looking forward to. Duncan and I would go, he'd say, okay, remember where we were yesterday at this time? This is what was happening. And I said, oh my God, I can't wait. And we'd row hard and we just listened to it, you know? And obviously it had to be when there was no storms. And if there was, we couldn't listen to it, but we listened to it and it was a moment just like breakfast. But you can't recreate breakfast. I couldn't go to my new team and say, okay, we're gonna do this breakfast thing. Tom and I did it, worked well for us. No, it has to be organic. And that was just a beautiful organic, as I like to call it, gathering point, a place for me to just kind of reconnect with my teammate right there and just be reminded. And it was beautiful. So there was, you know, I've always been a guy that takes maybe sports a little too seriously. And now I'm not like that. I love, it's okay to be silly, you know.
Well, I think that comes back to earlier, we were talking about how you've changed, you know, it was creating space. You create space for those things to happen organically. they are hard. It's frustrating because you hear that. It's like, oh, I'd love to start that tradition, but it has to come somehow happen organically. There's one word that you've mentioned maybe once or twice today. And I'm just curious, as the leader of that boat, accountability, like, you know, building up to the row, you know, do you have a approach around accountability to make sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing? Or do we all just trust? Is that your approach? And when, you know, how do you approach accountability when it comes to your teams?
Well, first of all, I'm a big fan of assessment tests, both individual and group assessment tests. There is a million of them out there. We've all heard of them, you know, Myers-Briggs, you know, Insights, whatever you want. I don't really care which one you pick, but it's really great to do them with your teams. And for these reasons, and it goes to accountability, is, you know, it doesn't matter which one it is. What it does is it creates more, you know, use that phrase, creating space for you to listen to what your teammates want to tell you and for you to talk about yourself. This is kind of interesting, but assessment tests tell you stuff about yourself. And sometimes you say, oh my God, that's so me. And other times you're like, I don't really agree with this one. It's great. Let's talk about it. But at least it starts a conversation. So I can have my teammate Jordan, who on the surface, him and I are nothing alike, you know, military guy from the UK, tatted neck to foot, you know, big hunkin' muscles, quiet, not talkative and yakking like me all the time. On the surface, nothing in common. And then we get to our assessments and we're the most paired up. So let's talk about it. And I find out that he's actually a pretty emotional guy. You know, he's sensitive. And I just let him talk about the things that he agrees with from the test results and the things he doesn't. And I listen. And those things would never have come out. And then I talk to him about my stuff and they listen. And we just talk about it. And it great gave us great space, because then here comes the accountability piece. There's no sense holding somebody accountable for something that they're going to fail in, you know, that's ridiculous. On our Pacific row, this last row that we did, we had 7 ocean crossings between the 4 of us, just more than any, by leaps and bounds, more than any other team will have for maybe ever. But Jordan had 0. So he's only gone the team that had none, 0. And for him to be held accountable for understanding how the water maker works, routing responsibilities, that's just ridiculous. And you would say, well, it's only fair that he knows that stuff too. Everybody should know the rules. I disagree with that. For him to spend time to learn all that stuff when he's got 3 other guys on the team that should be held accountable for routing decisions, for how the water maker works, he should be held accountable for other things, training up the speed, making sure that his seasickness is under control. These are the things. So when we do these assessment tests and we understand each other's roles and responsibilities, then we can start to hold people accountable. But I think accountability starts with having a realistic interpretation of what those roles and responsibilities and how we hold people accountable. I do not believe that everybody should be held accountable for all the same things. There's certain things that everyone should be held accountable, being respectful to each other, you know, those types of things, being on their shifts on time, those types of things. Those are things that everybody is capable of doing. But there's other more tactical roles and responsibilities that Jordan should not be held accountable for, but I absolutely 100% sure. One of the things that I'm held accountable for, having the funds in order to be able to pay for the things that we need. All right. That's my responsibility. I am the fundraiser. And I'm going to tell you something right now. If I don't have the funds, well, then I'm going to be having to pull it out of my own personal account, because I told everybody I'd have that stuff. So, you know, it's all different like that. So, and that's where I go with that.
Yeah, that echoes for me so much of, you know, Bill Belichick is do your job, not his job, not that guy's job, but to the best of your ability, you're accountable to this job for your position. I think there's a lot there for coaches as well. I want to get you out of here on this. This is my last question here for you. You've got the, you know, the common story here is the ocean crossings, but you've also spent a little time on land and you did a desert crossing. And, you know, you mentioned right at the beginning when you were talking about your why that some of the exploration, some of tackling the impossible is finding out who Jason's going to be on the other side. And so I'm curious, you know, how are the lessons from the desert crossing different from maybe what you learned about yourself or learned about leadership on the ocean crossings?
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother podcast, but I will say that, you know, with the rowing, it was like going into a familiar territory. I love to row. I'm very good at rowing. I can row for long periods of time. The suffering associated with the physical suffering associated with rowing is something I'm very familiar with. I can handle. Now we're going to a desert area. It's dry. It's barren. It's hot. And this is not necessarily in my wheelhouse. There's going to be a navigational aspect that's going to be difficult. You know, there's going to be pounding of the joints. It's different. So I think the biggest part was that my teammates and I were all going into this very much unknown, unfamiliar environment. And there was a little bit of it was scary. And I remember the closest thing I've ever had to maybe like a little bit of a nervous breakdown before one of these things was we're already out in the middle of nowhere in Namibia getting ready. We spent a week in these little huts. This was going to be the last time we're going to be anything that close to civilization for a while. And they had these little outdoor showers, you know, and I was showering. We were leaving that morning to start the thing. And I just remember like, I don't know if I can do this. Because whenever I'm rowing, I think, well, I'm good at rowing. But this is like, I just don't know. So I think the biggest difference was that was way out of my comfort zone, you know. And so I went in there thinking, if I'm going to be changed by this, and I know that I will be prepared to find out a lot of things about yourself that you don't like. And while I did, I was actually very proud of myself for what my team and I were able to accomplish and what I brought to the table. So whereas rowing, it's like, well, I'm already good at this. So, you know, that portion should be taken care of. It was very humbling. And like I said, probably could do a podcast on that one at some point. So maybe we dive into that another day.
For our listeners, you've got a great office set up there. It's much cleaner than mine at the moment. But I can't help but notice you've got this lovely leather armchair behind you and a table with some books next to it. We talk a lot about reading and books and journaling and reflection. And I'm sure you probably read a decent amount and journal and reflect. You've mentioned today. I was curious if you could share maybe books that have been highly influential in your journey and just a little bit about, maybe it's one of those that's next to the chair there. And then just kind of your journaling, you have any rituals or disciplines there as a leader that you do?
Yeah, I do. I'm an avid reader, have been most of my life. Reading is a big part of my daily routine. I probably read and an hour or two a day. Some of that's in the morning before I start everything. And a lot of times that's at night as well. Reading for me is sometimes educational. Sometimes it takes the place of watching TV or something like that. I read a lot of fiction. Most people think in my position, I'll read a lot of nonfiction. I'd probably say that I'm one third nonfiction, you know, biographies, any kind of strategy books, and then two-thirds fiction stories, classic literature. So I go back, I think they both help immensely, and studies show that even reading classic literature will certainly help cognitively. Journaling is also a big part. I do all that stuff. I have a little bit of a routine in the morning. I have two apps, one that's cognitive development, the other one is because I'm Spanish, so I just do that. Then I do my reading, and I always have a journal, which you can see behind me, that I write in. And sometimes it's just writing my thoughts about a story I'm reading. In terms of books, I'm sure everybody is giving, you know, a lot of great books on maybe sports and stuff. If I were to give a book right now, I'm going to say that the book that I'm going to give everybody is A Gentleman in Moscow. And so that's by an author called Amor Towles. It was written about maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago. He has one more book out since then. So he's written three books. This is his second. And it has nothing to do with anything we're talking about, but it is about a man's life where he is in Russia, and he is imprisoned in one of the nicest hotels. And it's his life growing up in that hotel. He was a Russian. It was in a Russian aristocracy. He was accused and convicted of writing a poem that went against the Russian government. And while usually at that time, which was, I think, in this point, this was in like the 1940s or something like that, he would have been killed because he was aristocracy. Instead, he was imprisoned in the nicest hotel. And it's his life as he grows up in this hotel, working at the restaurant, the people that come and go, and it's the history of Russia as it goes in Moscow. And I'll say, read it because it's beautifully written, and read it because you find, even in some of the most hopeless situations, this guy, this man can never leave the hotel. He starts in his 20s and can never leave it, or he'll be shot. He finds a beautiful world and a beautiful life in a seemingly hopeless situation. And I think we can all resonate with that. When our dreams of sports end, when we go through things that seem insurmountable, we find joy in some of the smaller things. And I just really enjoy that book. So,
speaking of beautifully written, Matt reads something at the end of the documentary that is, whoever wrote it is beautiful. What was that piece there he reads at the end of the documentary?
So that was a card, a letter that his wife gave to him to open only when he needed it. And where she got the words, I don't know, but we call it Matt's benediction. And it's just, it's gorgeous. And I mean, you couldn't have like had a better kind of like ending, and listening to him and watching him read those words about finding your ocean. You know, it's there to define you, as it said. And it's just, it was gorgeous. And very indebted to Matt for how much he wore his heart on his sleeve during that time and chose to record even some of the tougher moments, which I think make the documentary so much more powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate that one greatly. She needs to probably take up a career in writing, I think. That was incredible. I cry like every time I watch that. You've got the documentary, you've got the book. How else are you helping, you know, organizations and teams out there that our followers and listeners can potentially reach out about?
Yeah, the first thing is just contact me. You know, I'm not certainly not too big or too good for anybody to just shoot me a text message or give me on, you know, Instagram on message or email me, and I will respond, because I just like hearing other people's stories, and if there's anything I can do, I'd be happy to. Lot 35, my company that I founded is, you know, a leadership development company. So we work with large organizations usually, and help them build better teams, be better leaders of those teams. But where we also help teams, high school teams, collegiate teams. So if you're a coach out there and you just need to bounce something off of me or my team, we want to hear from you. That's not lip service. I promise you'll get a response. So reach out to us. Tell us what you thought about this. If you have follow-up questions, if something there's on your mind, I'm here.
Okay, that's it for part three of our conversation with Caldwell. If you want to connect with Jason, go to lat35.co. He's got two great books that we referenced in the conversation, but he's also got that documentary, Chasing. It's on Apple TV and Amazon Prime. And wow, yeah, I mean, you got to check it out. Have I mentioned that I've watched it four times already? I've also created a Chasing Documentary Team Discussion Guide PDF. And a lot of coaches in the TOC community, these are the coaches that myself and Nate and Shane work with through our mentorship program, they have been using the documentary with their team and this discussion guide to help them have a great post-documentary discussion. And just the takeaways and the impact on the team, I mean, it's been really, really profound. And I bet you'd like to get your hands possibly on that team discussion guide PDF. Well, guess what? You don't have to be a member of TOC. If you purchase a copy of my book, The Culture System, and you send a receipt of that purchase to support@tocculture.com, we'll send you the Chasing Documentary Team Discussion Guide PDF so that you can watch that documentary with your team and then have a really impactful and meaningful discussion with your players. All you're going to do is purchase a copy of the Culture System and send the receipt to support@tocculture.com.